Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
Episode 58. I am one of your hosts, and with me today is...
Pat.
Oh, that's it.
Oh.
It's just the two of us.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah, sorry. Paused for Kat, so...
Yeah.
Well, we should probably take a moment of silence for her, huh?
No, because that's somber. No, Kat's doing some job change stuff. So, you know, January was a pretty long month, and we took some time off. Everybody's, you know, life comes at you, and you got to do things to change your life. And she's doing things to change her life, and could not make it today.
So she's got
some work to do.
But totally fine. She'll be back again.
Yeah, and there's a good chance I will not be back for a little while after today. So we'll be this will be an interesting one.
So, yeah. So anyway, we also took a little bit of time off. After the New Year's, so we're back from a hiatus.
Yeah. Yes, we're back. There's a lot to sort of just go over. A lot of speculative stuff for the past like a month or so.
Yeah, it's always kind of slow here in the beginning of New Year's because people are still trying to figure out where everything's gonna pan out.
Right, and then you have like the push of movie season into the Oscars. So there's a lot of not a lot of nerd stuff, and you end up with a lot of I don't want to use the term the negative term, but a lot of thought provoking films.
Yeah, high art films. Yeah, no.
So yeah, and then comics. You know, you're in the middle of a lot of series as opposed to things beginning at this point of year. You see a lot of that in spring and summer. So
yeah, people are getting out and about. Yeah, to their local comic book stores.
Picking
up some pages.
Yeah. Also, as a PSA, get to your local comic book store, pick up those individual issues because it is that time of year where sales are down for comic shops, so whatever you can do to come in and keep those boxes clean is very beneficial. Public service announcement there.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's just jump right into it, because there has been some news. It looks like this is pretty major, so I think in the interim time period, Scott Derrickson had left Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and... I think about 2 days ago, Sam Raimi was revealed to be in talks for the directorial spot of this film. So
that should be interesting. Famously for the Spider-Man,
Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3.
Yep,
I love Spider-Man 2.
The first trilogy, I guess.
The first trilogy.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, that's a. Those are some great movies.
There's some great movies, and I think
Willem Dafoe was just a classic villain in the first one.
Yeah, he's an amazing Green Goblin with a bad costume.
That's why I said Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe, not the Green Goblin.
Norman Osborn was awesome in those movies. No, I come at this, and this is all in talks, which in talks could just mean anything, you know, like it could be he sat down with Kevin Feige and it's not even for Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
It's just because of his backlog of films that we associate him with something in the horror vibe, and that would make sense, but maybe it's not this film. But anyway, I have mixed feelings about this. I don't think that the Spider-Man films hold up very well in what we're used to, and the bigger problem I have with Sam Raimi is he's got a very specific style, and whether or not he will gel with what the MCU has established or not.
Interesting. Yeah, because he's more of a quote-unquote realistic
director,
slightly.
He's a bit of an auteur director, and he's been around for a while. It's not like he had, like, three movies and came onto this so that, like...
Yeah.
You know, We know Raimi's look. He's done really bad movies like The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, or no, is it Oz the Great and Powerful?
I haven't seen that.
It's bad. It's not good.
Yeah,
and it's a franchise type movie. So I'm like, I don't know if jumping into that is what I'm hoping to see, but I could be completely proven wrong. Maybe there's this like a specific idea that he has, or what he did with Spider-Man was because technology hadn't quite gotten to where it is now, and there's much more he has in his head for what he can do. So,
yeah, who knows?
He also could be a really huge fan of Doctor Strange as a character, which is always interesting to see what people will object.
He's like, a Doctor Strange movie?
Well, he used the name in, I think it's in Spider-Man 2, when they're trying to name Dr. Octopus. The intern or the other reporter goes, Dr. Strange, and he goes, great, but taken. So.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that would be funny.
So is there love there already for the character? So he had his little jab in there. So, but with this potential news also comes a little bit of sadness. Rachel McAdams is out of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
So. Oh no!
Yeah, I know. I'm sad about this. I don't know if it's loyalty to Scott Derrickson or because of the all of the changes. If there's a change in production schedule, you know, where she thought she'd be recording on these days and now can't. You know, that's
yeah. So, oh well. But it was nothing bad. She wasn't like ousted or anything.
No, I don't think so. And you know, a lot of that stuff won't come out. It's just now that the character is just leaving a project. So
yeah, no, that's fair. That's a good point too that you bring up.
Yeah, I like Rachel McAdams.
No, yeah, I thought she did a great job on the first Doctor Strange.
And Mean Girls is amazing. So
true.
Cool. Well. I was going to say a little more sort of losing characters. Why the Last Man has actually lost its lead actor, Barry Keoghan, after recording the pilot and the show kind of being marred with creative changes and showrunner changes. It seems now that the lead actor's out too. So,
well, that is quite a setback.
I feel like this project is sort of doomed to purgatory. Like, it just feels like one of those things where they can't get it right, and it might be because of a product of its time. Like, I just read Watchmen, or Watchmen. Wow. Why the Last Man, book one for the first time, and while you can recognize how strong it is narratively, it feels like an early 2000s story. And it may not be something that's they can find a way to adapt right now. Like, there's some pieces that need to fall into place and some rewriting that needs to be done to make it work for today. Unless they do it as a period piece, which I don't know if the general audience is ready for a period piece of something that's only like 15, 20 years ago.
You know? Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know if you have any experience with Why the Last Man.
No, I've never read it, so I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But
I know a lot of people were excited for this.
Yeah.
This falls in the same camp as like Lock and Key, where it's like seeing one of the big independent non-superhero stories finally getting an adaptation and in a format that has really been kind to comic books in general, being the episodic, you know, television or streaming format. So,
yeah,
leaning too hard.
Yeah, for sure. What else? I have a bit of news here. I guess keeping on the streaming service news. Netflix is going to do a One Piece live-action adaptation, apparently. So
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued because of, like, I've never myself actually watched One Piece, but I know, like, the characters have powers, right? Like, there's a lot of sort of weird, like, superpowery stuff or, like, magic in the series?
Yeah, so I've seen a little bit of it. I watched it back in the day. And the main character, Monkey D. Luffy, has stretchy powers.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, Miss Marvel-esque stretchy powers. And
Elastigirl.
I don't know. There is magic, like, a magic fantasy element. A lot of, like, anime-esque swordsmanship.
Okay. So swords that are twice the size of the human body, like...
like the just regular katanas, typically, but they, you know, do a lot of the fly past them and then cut them in half with the black and white
cuts.
Juxtaposed cutscene.
Okay, okay. Like the thing where you see a character take a step and then yeah. you see the impact of the blades, but then they're bounced backwards and
yeah, they pull the sword out like 1 inch and put it back in.
And then the strike has been done.
The thing is already cut, you know.
Gotcha. Which I'm totally down for. It's just you said this was coming from the same studio that's working on Cowboy Bebop, right?
Yes, so this is Tomorrow Studios, which is the one that's working on Cowboy Bebop. The show also is going to be executive producer Eiichiro Oda, who is the creator of One Piece.
Woo-woo.
So that's cool that they have the creator attached the same way they do with Cowboy Bebop. So I feel like that's kind of a good sign for the Cowboy Bebop show, that they have enough confidence in it as a show that they're doing another show already, and we haven't even seen it as audiences. Right.
Well, yeah, because John Cho got injured, so that that halted production.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So, and it's probably, and that once again, good signs for the studio, because that means that the injury was a fluke, and it wasn't something that was, related to the way the production was set up. It was just,
yeah,
sometimes shit happens on, studio sets
that you can't just control. Or something,
It's we've heard horror stories about stuff, so it's glad that it's just an injury, that's something that's recoverable.
Yeah.
But, you compare those two animes, and although Cowboy Bebop is a science fiction story and there's, people flying around in spaceships instead of cars, there's still, there's not really magic in the world, there's not dealing with, special effects in that way. It's more like explosion effects and, ships and things. So this is quite a bit more, potentially quite a bit more effects heavy. And more for the audience will have to take a bigger leap to watch something like this than they will for Bebop.
That is true, because stylistically, I can see Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop is very realistic, tonally. I mean, not design wise, obviously, but I can totally see how you would adapt that very easily.
Yeah.
And it's hard sci-fi, too, which, yes, is typically less effects-heavy.
Right.
You just need a couple, shots of spaceships.
Right. Silent space, too, you can do so many things, too, to minimize that.
But with the more fantasy, cartoony elements of One Piece, then that,
Well, even the stretchy power.
Exactly, and that's the main character
of the show. We haven't seen done well in live action yet. We've had two failed Fantastic Four franchises, and
but Disney is putting their money on Miss Marvel with a TV show,
and so it'll be interesting who comes out of the gate first. I mean, we've seen it work really well in animation with Elastigirl, in The Incredibles. They did this amazing thing with it, so. Who's gonna get out of the gate first with this, and is it, who's gonna win the streaming wars to the stretchy person?
I guess, yeah. It's all about the stretchy people.
Stretchy people! Alright, I feel like that we can segue over to...
I guess... that kind of gives a good, I just have a quick bit of news that, speaking of Elastigirl and Pixar stuff, a good friend of mine... sent me a bit of news recently that an ex-Pixar employee, Alexander Adele, is starting a new film studio, Magnesium Films, to do television shows based on a lot of new material. I was reading their statement, and they were like, there's so much new stuff out there that's great and awesome that can be easily adapted to film or television, so why not just do that? And they are, and they're starting with a great comic, Gunnar Craig Court, that's, I'm a huge fan of, Tom Slidell. It's been going on for, over 10 years at this point. Fantasy, sci-fi, epic. Yeah, kind of hard to describe that genre of stuff without its own separate episode, but it sounds really cool. It sounds really at least, from what I was reading, they sound very ambitious.
This is really exciting to me, and it's exciting because we are now in a place where the people who were brought up through Pixar are starting to do their own things. So, like, that generation that was, like, brought in through this gigantic studio is now in a place where they can go, you know, there's, like, 17 streaming services that I can probably work with to make original content.
Yeah.
And in this case, adapted content that needs a home. So getting these smart... It's like the Ghibli instance with Miyazaki announcing his retirement and all of a sudden Studio Ponoc pops up. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you get these people who have been working under masters being like, well, we can do this. We can make something new and something special. This sounds sweet.
Yeah.
Also, Magnesium Films, great name.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that. I was like, hell yeah. I'm going to watch something from Magnesium Films.
Right.
Especially Gunnar Craig Court. Like, that's... So, I don't know if you've ever...
Never read
any
it.
Of it, Matt, but it's... It's so easy. It's going to be such an easy adaptation, and all the it's so great. It's basically like Harry Potter on steroids.
Love it, love it. Just don't go to Apple TV. Sorry,
I know, right? It's like I see something. It's like such and such show from such and such creators, and I'm like, oh my god, that sounds amazing. It's like, well, now on Apple TV.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Cartoon Saloon being over there still makes me sad.
Oh no. Yeah.
I want more Secret of Kells. You know.
Yes. Yeah, I guess you mentioned more Disney Plus.
Yeah, so I was saying in the realm of streaming, Marvel had their gigantic Disney Plus Super Bowl ad. I say gigantic.
Yeah, it's only gigantic. 30 seconds. Right? That's what I had to say.
It's gigantic because of its response. So it hits three shows. We had The Falcon and Winter Soldier. We have WandaVision, and then a little end tag for Loki. But there was so much to gleam in 30 seconds that it's absolutely insane. Like, what you could potentially see. First and foremost, they answered the stupid question about whether or not Sam can throw the shield in the first freaking 5 seconds of this TV spot.
I saw that too, and I'm really hoping they do it in the show, is that, because they cut right before it hits.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to just hit the tree and fall straight down.
like a sight gag?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I want it to be, like, I want it to chop the tree in half. I want it to be the opposite of that, because I think it's such a stupid argument. People are like, oh, Winter Soldier should have the shield, because he has a... Fuck you guys. Sam Wilson's the more interesting character. Honestly, I think that they should kill off Bucky in this story.
See, for me, it's really weird because I started reading comics when Sam Wilson was Captain America. That was the current state of the Marvel Universe. And so, for me, Sam Wilson is Captain America. Like, he always has been. And Steve Rogers is, like, the guy who holds the shield intermittently when Sam can't.
Right.
So, like, yeah, I don't care anything about the Winter Soldier. No. You can kill him off. That would be a great, emotional arc for Sam to get.
Yeah. It's to lose his two friends that he's really developed through this. I mean, even, like, Black Widow's lost now. Like,
yeah.
Sam's story can be about loss of the people that... this family that he found within the Avengers. You know?
Yeah, and he deals with a lot of trauma in his solo stories.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rough stuff. It's not colorful, high-punching, fun action stuff.
Even his introduction to the MCU as a counselor for people recovering, coming back home from war.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So it's like, it's a perfect character to deal with loss. And it isn't that I want, you know, I don't really want Bucky to die, but I just don't think that having these two characters, what's the conflict anymore? Like, because I don't want to see Bucky fighting Falcon, you know, fighting Captain America. Like, that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
I almost feel like Bucky is the old master at this point in time who just wants to fade away like Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know?
Like Steve Rogers.
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah.
But seeing him use leverage to throw the shield, you know, it was just, it's physics, you know? It's like, it's the discus toss in the Olympics. Duh!
Oh, yeah. No, he did that exactly. he did that exactly like Cap did it too.
Yeah.
You know,
swing with your legs, you know?
And it had the arc on it too as well. I'm pretty sure, yeah.
So that was cool. Also, you get a quick glimpse of the U.S. government's version of Captain America and U.S. Agent.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Walking out onto the football field, which is pretty funny to see during the Super Bowl.
Right, yeah. It totally worked for that type of storytelling. It's also really, like, I think that's going to be the major crux of the series, is that we have a government that's not ready for a black Captain America, so they make their own, you know? Whether or not that's the true shield, or they have a new shield that was made for that character, so we have kind of a Battle of the Shields scenario.
Ooh, interesting. I never actually read that arc with the U.S. agent, though, so...
he's a character that's existed for many years. I want to say it was late 80s creation, but don't quote me on that.
Fair enough.
But yeah, like, so you have... And he's played by Kurt Russell's son.
So it's
good old American boy, you know, from
corn-fed
America. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's so... And it's tied to us as viewers, because Kurt Russell was also part of the MCU, so you get this,
that's funny.
This love. It's like, yeah, is this a boy who grew up? We watched it, you know, like that kind of thing. And I love that dichotomy already is interesting. Plus, you have Zemo being a potential, like... Is he pulling the strings somehow and, like, getting the government to do that? Does he have still notes about, like, the super soldier stuff? And that's a way that they can make this new Captain America. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? There's very little. And then WandaVision, too.
WandaVision. Let's jump into WandaVision, because... We got to see some classic looks for the characters. We have the hinting of the Gray Vision, which is what happens at the after, or I think he might be gray within the original Infinity Gauntlet story. So, like, the loss of the color in the show, is that supposed to be a visual representation that maybe when he does return, he won't be fully formed? This was nuts, because the jump between,
so
like...
So it'll be, like, less powerful, I guess, because he was pretty OP, yeah. Like, originally, in the MCU, in Earth 616.
Right. Does the Mind Stone, and what does that mean for the stones? Does the Mind Stone inhabit him, and that's, like, why she can have a universe with him in it? Is because somewhere within the multiverse, they're able to utilize a version of the stones? Are the stones truly gone? Like, that's a big question mark.
I have a feeling that it's going to be a combination. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be one of the reasons that it's so weird and trippy and stylistic, is that it's some sort of combination between the Mind Stone and Wanda's powers, like her true ultra powers,
right,
to put them in better terms, the House of M powers,
the reality altering or reality making powers that she actually has,
where she can literally create realities and universes, and it's some sort of marriage of those two very large factors,
right,
that...
And maybe somehow the Mind Stone allows them to come back, like, because it almost looks like it's glitching. Like, she's trying to create a universe that she has with Vision, but it's unstable. It's not a real universe, so it keeps jumping between, like, ideas in her head of the ideal family. So you have, like, the 1950s Leave It to Beaver look, and then the Roseanne 90s version, and... I feel like there's another one in there. Like, there's a
Yeah, it kind of cycles through, like, era sitcoms.
Right.
Essentially, like, I Love Lucy to, you know, what have you.
Right, because it does go all the way back, like, black and white style.
Yeah.
And we get the classic Wanda costume, which...
Yeah, like, really classic. And it looks like the, like... 50s almost.
Right. Really sexy and really ridiculous. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it kind of answers those questions of, like, do we want to see these on film? I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like taking modern aesthetics and applying it to the logic of the costumes,
yep,
I guess.
I like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. People, people always say, oh, you know, it's not the original one. I'm like, right. The original one looks like garbage.
Right.
It yeah. looks silly. If I saw original Wolverine, like, run up to me, I would just start laughing, like, as he killed me.
Right. Yeah, there's this weird, like, it's almost like the Uncanny Valley idea, where it's, we want it to be close, but not be exact. Like, the scales on Captain America's costume worked so well in Endgame.
Yeah.
But if they made it exactly like the comic book version, it would probably just look ridiculous, you know?
Cough. Captain America 1, cough.
Yeah, the propaganda costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah that's yeah. true. Well, and then, like, you can do the... I always jump to Batman v Superman for the best Batman costume, being what Affleck wore... Where it's cloth, but clearly there's some sort of a bodysuit underneath it, and it's like that worked so freaking well.
I can't really remember it off the top of my head.
It looks like Frank Miller's Batman with a stylized bat symbol.
Fair enough. I like Dark Knight Batman suit a lot. It's classic.
That's totally different conversation.
Because as I'm saying that, I realize I shouldn't get into that with you.
One of my least favorite bat suits is the Dark Knight suit. But I like the Batman Begins suit 10 times better than the Dark Knight one.
Oh, so, my. Okay, fair enough. Yes, this is definitely a conversation.
Yeah, it's a different conversation. But it's like, it is funny what that looks like on Elizabeth Olsen, who is just a gorgeous human being as well as being a talented actress. You know, like, I don't want to downplay her acting ability at all, but yeah. Can't wait to see the series. Can't wait to see any of these. And then Loki, we get, like, a quick tease of...
Yeah, he just looks at... He just says, like, one line,
yeah. I think,
at the end.
But there's a lot to gleam. I've been looking at stuff. Apparently, he's imprisoned by some sort of an organization that literally is policing cracks in the multiverse. So, like, people who are abusing time travel and... creating alternate dimensions and alternate realities.
Interesting.
So that's like, we will probably deal with some really, really high level beings in that show. Which,
I mean, I kind of expected that.
Right. Well, you know, the main character is a god, technically, so.
Yeah.
So what's higher than that?
I didn't really expect him to, you know, be in the laundromat or whatever. Right.
And this one will not release in 2020. This is the one series that's not slated for this year.
Yeah.
Because I believe, and this is, IgerCon happened as well, so we'll just lump this together. but in IgerCon, the dates were revealed for Disney+. August is Falcon Winter Soldier will begin. October, we will get Mandalorian Season 2.
Yeah.
And then December, we will start seeing WandaVision.
Oh, WandaVision.
And then there's no... I don't think Loki is until 2021.
Well, I mean, if they do WandaVision in December, then that doesn't really leave room for...
Yeah, because of episodic releases. Yeah. So it almost looks like they're tagging them right after one another. Like, you're going to get the episodes we'll go into. So Winter Soldier will end, and maybe we'll get a week break, and we'll get Mandalorian again. And so... To not really overlap them, just keep giving you new content.
That actually, yeah, that makes up, because that's like about 4 months. That would be 12 weeks, 12 episodes.
Yeah, and we know.
Sorry, yeah, 3 months.
Yeah. So we're probably looking at maybe 8-episode seasons for the most part.
We'll see. I was thinking when they started this that there wouldn't even be many season twos to a lot of these. There would just be one-off seasons and just... use the same production studio and reuse characters. And,
yeah. I would imagine that would be the case. Mandalorian, I think, was just a runaway success, and that never seemed like it was going to be conceived as a singular thing. So
yeah. I can see that going on for more seasons, mm-hmm. though, like, with its style.
Yeah. And a finite story, though, you know, like, make sure that there's an end to that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely building towards something, but that's a conversation for
Another time. Also within IgerCon, and I'm going to credit a Force Center podcast for that term. IgerCon is the whenever Bob Iger has, like, an investor phone call. But there's apparently 7 other Marvel shows in various stages of production for Disney+. So,
yeah, like, I know of at least huge. I know of at least 3.
Yeah, it's
She-Hulk, Moon Knight, and Miss Marvel. Whoop whoop.
Wait, yeah, exactly. what a trio, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Which is good. I mean, it's a good sign that there's more down in the pipeline for these things, because, I mean,
yeah,
it is a test of the waters, right? Like, financially, it probably makes more sense to put things on the big screen, but storytelling-wise, the small screen is proving to be better, you know?
Like, yeah, I mean, what else is Disney going to do with all of its Plus money?
Right. And, yeah, that's, and Plus, also,
no pun intended, also,
it's probably good to have a continuous stream of content that is original for that service.
Yeah. Well, not that's that the I'm big like, draw for streaming services is original content.
But the big draw for Disney is the backlog of content.
That's true. So,
but you, then, you want to satisfy the new consumer as well.
Yeah, and I can go and watch any old Disney movie, but I'm not going to be on there as much as, say, Netflix if they're not putting out too much new stuff. Because, you know, I got to see that new season of Hilda whenever that's coming out. Jesus, or whatever. Freaking Christ.
So. I feel like that's a sore spot for me at this point. It's like the Annie Award-winning show that was clearly, like, one of the best all ages and family shows, not getting a season two makes zero sense.
So... Yeah, how do you really feel, Nat?
On that note.
Yeah, anyway, what else is there?
I don't think I said this to you, but I had a weird Worlds Colliding moment for me. So I've been watching a YouTube show for a number of years now called the Movie Trivia Schmodown. And recently, Christian Harloff, the co-creator of the Schmodown, has started his own network. It's called SEN, or the Schmodown Entertainment Network. And they have announced a partnership with Skybound Entertainment, which is the company created by Robert Kirkman.
Yeah.
And, you know, publishes things like, co-published Walking Dead and...
Yeah.
Murder Falcon and Extremity and a lot of the indie Skyward?
Yeah.
So all of these, like, it was a weird moment for me where because I've been touting this show, like, it is my only religious YouTube show is the Movie Trivia Schmodown. I have to watch it. It's movie trivia mixed with the WWE or MMA. It is fan-freaking-tastic. And the fact that now they're going to be tied to a production company that I absolutely enjoy, and they're the people who introduced me to Daniel Warren Johnson, and I haven't said enough about him on this podcast. So yeah, it was just a really weird Worlds Collide moment where it's like these fandoms apparently are definitely have similar interests, you know? So
yeah,
it's really cool.
Interesting.
So yeah, nice. check out Movie Trivia Schmodown for all you listeners. I think if you enjoy, for me, I'm a huge fan of the Inner Geekdom division. That's an entire division devoted to, you know, superhero movies, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. There's also a Star Wars division, but that's much more complicated. But yeah, like, check these out. It's a really, really fun show. Support unique creators. And yes, support Skybound, too. Like, pick up some Image Comics, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't.
I don't know either.
So, I have a bit of, like, unrelated things.
Yeah.
I don't really, saw that, Jen Bartel designed a pair of Puma sneakers that celebrate the upcoming, I guess, currently released Harley Quinn.
And the Fantabulous.
Sorry, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn movie.
That's the weird cross promotional stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like cool, awesome comic artist designing work for a comic book based property, but shoes?
On shoes? Yeah.
It's like, huh.
They look really cool too, actually. They're like white with a rainbow esque shiny stripe down the side.
Okay.
Some gold laces.
So wait, like, is it not comic art then on it? It's like...
The box has her art on it. Like, the lid is a Jen Bartel Harley Quinn.
But it's not like Jen Bartel Harley Quinn on the shoe.
There's, like, a little bit... You have to let...
Okay, I'm like, I'm really intrigued. Like she actually designed the shoes.
That's what I was getting from what I was reading on it. To be fair, I haven't bought a pair yet, so I'm not entirely sure. But, yeah, sorry, it's hard to describe by just talking about them. I'm not a shoe person. A sneakerhead, yes.
Oh my god, and like it has like Harley's hammer as like a lace accessory.
Yeah, thing. like a little dangly.
I'm it's so weird. It's
don't you want a pair?
I kind of do. Like,
I know, right?
I'm a zero drop kind of guy though, so I gotta make sure that there's like, you know, a wide version, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
it's so wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love Jen Bartel and I'm a big fan of Puma.
Yeah, check her out on Twitter. She actually has like an unboxing of her own shoes. You know, like, super strange, but that's cool.
Yeah, I was watching that. It was pretty great. Wouldn't that be awesome, though? I bet she was feeling so fly.
Right? Oh, my God. And, like, the individual insoles are different.
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah. One's red and one's blue.
Well, and they have, like, patterns on it. Like, one's, like, a starburst and the other one's, like, a galaxy look.
Oh, nice.
That's really crazy. Really crazy. Anticipation for this movie is pretty high now.
Yeah, I know, right? It's weird. Jen Bartel got shoes for it.
Go figure.
Yeah. So, also, I saw on another piece of awesome me news, or well, Keith actually sent this to me.
Yeah.
That, one of our favorite Inhumans is coming back, Mosaic, and a one-shot, I believe it's just solicited as right now.
It's in a story, or a one-shot comic called Marvel Voices.
Yeah, and with the original creative team of Kari Randolph and Joff Leon.
That's awesome.
Which... if you're a listener of the show, you know that we tout Kari Randolph.
Yes, all the time. We do.
Not so much Joff Leone. Sorry, Joff. I mean, you're an amazing writer.
Yeah, I mean,
we should throw that out there.
Do more quick stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Before we go back to how awesome Kari Randolph is.
Yay! No,
just kidding. Both of y'all are awesome. We love everyone.
It definitely, for me too, like, adds way more excitement into the idea of this Marvel Voices one shot. Not that a one shot that's highlighting minority creators is a negative thing by any stretch of the imagination, but creators going back to a character that they haven't worked on for a couple of years as part of that, that's really cool too. Like, that's and really awesome for Marvel to say, yeah, no, do it. Like, do Mosaic again. You guys have a story. Let's put it in there.
Yeah.
So.
It's funny that they, sorry, I just keep laughing that they have this thing. I mean, it's great. I love that they're doing it, but I was looking at my comics just the other day because I was talking to one of my coworkers who likes to paint, and I was like, man, there is a lot of Hispanic artists, like specifically, like a majority of the books that I read, I realize, are drawn by Hispanic creators.
Yeah.
And it was pretty nuts, so I'm kind of laughing.
I have to imagine that we are a high demographic for comic book reading, too. Like, there's gotta be a lot of Latinos who read comics.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with, like, Latin American culture and, like, melodrama. Like, cause it just seems like that's like, we love that type of storytelling. I don't know.
Superhero comics are telenovelas.
Yeah.
Just with superpowers.
Seriously. Like, I think about, Guillermo del Toro's commentary for Blade 2, and he specifically talks about that, like, the heightened dramatic tension. Like,
yeah, Captain America's evil twin brother came in, and he's in a coma.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, have to decide between the two.
Oh, bad. Yeah. No, there are. Like, so it'll be interesting to see what the creators on this list, like you said, because there's so many, or seemingly a lot of Latino creators. And
I mean, it has typically been a white male-dominated industry, but right. I feel as if it's actually not so, or getting less and less so.
Yeah, you know, there's.
At least from what I'm seeing.
I think it feels like a fairly open industry. I actually think women are the one who's they are least represented, it seems, in this industry.
I would say that's probably true. It's still a very male-dominated industry, but, yeah.
Yeah, and the female creators are freaking phenomenal.
Oh, I mean, we were just talking about Jen Bartel.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And
I think of the Kellys, too.
Yeah.
Thompson and DeConnick. So.
I mean, you know, I can't stop touting G. Willow.
I guess we kind of divulged into.
Anyway,
there's many creative voices in comics, which makes it once again one of the best mediums. You know,
I like to read a wide array of stories in general. I feel like the wider array of creators there is, the wider array of stories there is.
Yeah,
and. Comics is crazy. It's a crazy medium.
Yeah.
You have, like, literally everything.
Yeah.
So, anywho.
I think with that, we're actually going to move to two speculative stories. So, huge fan of a comic book called Scales and Scoundrels. It's 12 issues. It's a high fantasy, very D&D-inspired series by two awesome creators. And both of them... seem to be posting random stuff on Twitter and Instagram indicating that more Scales and Scoundrels are being created, which is very interesting to me because the series has been dead, I guess, for the past year. Have you read Scales and Scoundrels, Patrick?
I have not. I remember when it first came out and you were basically like... forcing it into my hands constantly.
Yeah.
And so I read a few pages, but I did not pick up the full thing. Sorry, Nat. Please don't.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's okay. And there's things that don't appeal to everybody. But Sebastian Gerner, I believe, got a publishing job as the lead publisher, the editor-in-chief of TKO Publishing.
Okay.
So the writer became an editor at a different... studio from Image.
Okay.
So I don't know if there was any sort of conflict there or just a timing thing, like, because Image is creator own stuff. So is that the issue? Is the fact that it's, you know, that's a lot of work to handle. So Galad has continued to do storyboarding and things, but it's really interesting to see how open they are about just showing stuff. And it's out there. You go to Galad's Instagram or Twitter page, and it's just like, yep, here's art. I guess there was a conversation where somebody's like, oh, man, it would be an amazing birthday present to get a new Scales and Scoundrels. And Sebastian Gerner's response was, oh, yeah, what's your birthday? So it's very, like, it's nonchalant. Something seems to be coming. Is it a new graphic novel? Is it returning back to its individual issues? If this is since a creator-owned book, is this going to come out of TKO? Like, is there going to be a new volume that's not with Image Comics, but TKO Publishing is going to release the next volume of Scales and Scoundrels?
That would be really interesting.
It would. That would be very, very interesting.
Well, I guess we'll have to keep our eyes peeled for that.
Yeah.
Just speculation right now. What's the, there's a bit of other speculative news, there
is. Darcy Van Polgeest and Ian Bertram seem to be actively working on a series called Precious Metal, which is book 2 of the Little Bird saga.
Yeah.
Not a sequel necessarily, not a continuation of the story, just part of the Little Bird saga.
Yeah, interesting. So,
we
were doing a little bit of theory.
Yeah, we were doing some irresponsible speculating.
Yeah, and it seems to be a prequel.
Of sorts.
Of sorts.
Yeah. Not a direct prequel to the story that we read, but a prequel about one of the characters we met inside of Little Bird.
Tangential prequel.
A tangential prequel. I like that.
Yes, as it were. So yeah, if our speculation is correct, then the story would center around what was
Sarge?
His name?
I think was I don't know that what the character's full name was, but I remember they
Sarge. He was the captain of the Marauders, the Wasteland Marauders, essentially, who were semi resistance and semi pirates.
Yeah, and it's
I think he's only in about 2 issues.
I think 2 issues. I want to say like right in the middle of the story too, like three and four maybe.
I was thinking 2 and 3.
Okay. Because it's definitely like one of those the not obstacles. It's like one of those things where it seems like it's going to be an obstacle for our hero, but becomes part of the solution, sort of.
Yeah.
Not to spoil Little Bird, but
as if you could spoil that book, really.
No, I can't wait to reread. I need to get that hardcover. That's a side conversation.
But. Yes. I'm very interested in this, though. And as I found out earlier, Darcy Van Polkis is in fact a man. I thought for the whole time Darcy was a lady's name, but I am in fact wrong, apparently. Yes, as Nat pointed out.
I wasn't sure.
Thank you. Well, should we get into some
more irresponsible stuff?
Even more irresponsible speculation?
Sure.
Actually, it's not technically speculation anymore, right?
I guess not, but there's some things to glean from this information, so...
Well, we should just get on with it before...
Yeah, so the Batman has officially started production. I still don't think that that's the name of the movie, but that's besides the point. For at least production, it's called The Batman.
Working title.
Yeah. And the cast list thus far has been released, so we're just going to go over it relatively quickly. Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne Batman. Colin Farrell as Oswald Cobblepot / Penguin. Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle / Catwoman. Andy Serkis as Alfred Pennyworth. Woo! Paul Dano as Edward Nashton, the Riddler. John Turturro as Carmine Falcone. Peter Sarsgaard as District Attorney Gil Coulson. Jeffrey Wright as James Gordon. Con O'Neill listed in an unspecified role. Probably something villainous. Alex Ferns as Commissioner Pete Savage. And then Jamie Lawson is playing Bella Real. There is some... gleaming from omission, I guess, would be a way to start the speculation.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright is not credited as Commissioner Gordon. He is credited as James Gordon. And Alex Ferns is Commissioner Pete Savage.
Yeah. So, you think he's going to die?
I think he's going to die. I also think that District Attorney Gil Coulson is going to die.
I think he's going to die, too.
I think we are looking at a situation where Harvey Dent is not cast in this movie because there's probably some stunt casting for who they have in place, and that is going to be not necessarily an end tag, but part of the finale of this film.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting to have District Attorney Coulson die.
Yeah.
You get District Attorney Dent, which is what people are more accustomed to.
Yep.
And then...
Yeah, I think it is important that there's two characters who have titles that are important to the Batman universe and are not the characters we're used to seeing in that. Which also means that Batman has been operating for a number of years without Commissioner Gordon. Now, has he been working with Captain Gordon?
I was thinking more of, I hope they go with hard-boiled Detective Gordon.
Okay.
Like open up on him in the trench coat in the alleyway crime scene kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where he's, inspecting the scene of the crime or something
right.
like that.
So being somebody who was involved with figuring out who killed the parents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could go directly like that, he was a cop and then became a detective.
Yeah.
And then, classic. That's a classic Commissioner Gordon story.
It is.
And God damn it, talk about good cast. This movie is like the best casting
right.
I've ever heard for a while. Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon. Yeah, his like grizzled voice that he does sometimes,
right?
Perfect for it.
I can't wait to see how they like visualize the glasses. You know, like are they gonna have him like are they gonna do like some light effects so that almost you don't see his eyes when he's got the glasses totally pulled up?
Oh, because we're now
in that part where technology has gotten to a place where the comic tropes are 100% where you can put them on screen.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do the straight costumes that we see, but, like, certain elements, like the glint on the glasses or, like, having maybe the white eyes in the bat suit. Like, we're – the audience is there to accept all of this now.
Yeah, as long as they do it well, which they can.
Yep.
And I haven't seen Paul Dano in anything in a minute, but
right.
– Him and a Riddler give him some straight hair with some weird, like, bangs or whatever.
Give him the freaking fire engine red hair, you know, like, super orange, like...
Yes.
Yeah, just to make him a ginger and let him go nuts.
I think out of anybody in the whole world, he could pull off the rounded Riddler cap.
The bowler hat?
The bowler, yes.
Oh, my God, I can't... I'm hoping... Like, there's so much interesting stuff in this. So the character of, was it Bella? I'm going to pull up the IMDb again. Bella Real is supposedly, like, somebody who's running against District Attorney Gil Coulson. So
okay.
Is this kind of like a three-way dance where there are two people who are running for the new district attorney spot, or he's trying to get reelected as district attorney, and then this dark horse candidate comes in that is a problem for the Falcone family. So maybe because there's an ethnic twinge to the characters casting so far. You know, we have a black Commissioner Gordon, we have a Latino Carmine Falcone. A black Catwoman, and spoilers for The Long Halloween, but there are familial connections to many of these characters.
Okay.
So are we being told that maybe Bella is actually a member of the Falcone family and is running in the district attorney position? So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's... That is some very interesting speculation. And I know earlier you and Kat, I have no familiarity, but you were talking about this being a Long Halloween
semi-loose
adaptation, which, yeah, this would seemingly set that up very nicely.
I like it. I like it so far. Give me Oswald Cobblepot, though, as the Iceberg Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
Aficionado.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, especially with freaking Colin Farrell.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to pull that off, if they're going to give him, like, a fat suit or something, though, or just have... Or how they're going to do his character design. But Marion is... I mean, Colin Farrell's a great actor, so I know he's going to nail... I know he's going to nail it hard, but...
I say let him tell Matt Reeves what he's thinking and see if Matt Reeves goes, we can make it work.
I feel as if he could definitely do that. He really gets, invested in characters.
Yep.
He's not a character actor, but, like...
No, I think he wants to be.
I think he wants to be.
I think he's a celebrity status A-list actor that wants to be a character actor.
That's hilarious. You're too good to be a character actor. Right? No, don't tell me what
right?
I can't do. Oh, gosh. Anyway, I'm very excited for this movie.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Give me the bat suit now. I want to see it. I want to see him. I want to see him in the suit so bad.
Oh, my goodness. So, that's going to be awesome.
Hashtag blue and gray.
Oh, all right. Well, with that, I guess we should probably sign off then.
All right.
All right. Well, bye.
Bye.